Those are winning numbers. Those are numbers that says Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States.
He's on the verge of a 1980 Ronald Reagan blowout of Jimmy Carter. And I don't see practically how the Democrats offset reality.
Actually, I don't see how they offset Fox News.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast. As heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest, and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for you on the internet on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. All right, we've got a guest joining us momentarily and quite a few news items to try and get to today, so I don't know that I'll be able to open our phones to listeners today or not. Nonetheless, if you'd like to ring in at any point this hour on the premise that I might be able to take a call or two, we will see. Our number, as always, is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. As we are in the final week of our summer fun drive here at KPFK, my local flagship station in L.A., you will need to hit button number one to join me on the air, preferably button number two to donate to KPFK, which makes so much of what we do here at the Bradcast every day possible in the first place. After a sweltering and or very wet weekend across much of the nation, which I hope to get to a little bit later in the program, we are still keeping our eyes on a very close congressional primary race from last week in Virginia, where far-right U.S. Congressman Bob Good, chair of the House's MAGA-based so-called Freedom Caucus, has been challenged by an even farther-right Trump-endorsed state senator by the name of John McGuire, who appears to have a foot up over Good, who was also opposed by Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy in addition to Trump. McCarthy opposed Good because Good voted in favor of McCarthy's ouster as Speaker. Trump, for his part, opposed Good because he dared to support Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in the GOP presidential primaries earlier this year and thus must be destroyed. As we go to air, McGuire is up by 348 votes out of more than 62,500 ballots that have been tallied by computer so far. There will almost certainly be a recount in that contest, and we'll be keeping our eyes on it, if only to get a sense of how a recount might unfold between two different 2020 election deniers. But as that race from last week continues to unfold, a number of important congressional and statewide primaries are taking place on Tuesday this week in New York, Colorado, and Utah in what will be the last set of down-ticket state primary elections in advance of the Republican National Convention in mid-July, which will be held in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a city that presumptive presidential nominee and 34-time convicted felon Donald Trump recently is said to have described as a, quote, horrible city, Desi Doyen. Have you been to Milwaukee?
I have not been to Milwaukee, but I do hear it's a lovely city, so I can't imagine why he would say such a thing.
You almost called it Hellwaukee just now.
Not intentionally.
I see what you're doing. You're agreeing with
it. It is hot there, though.
Yeah, it is. And wet, I believe, over the past couple of days, but we'll get to that later. In any event, if you live in one of those three states, New York, Colorado, or Utah, well, now is a great time to get out and vote and make sure you are properly registered to do so as you think you are before we get to the November 5 general election, when you and we and all of us really don't want to discover any surprises on Election Day. As well, both presumptive presidential candidates this week and their supporters are now attempting to manage expectations in various ways in advance of this Thursday's critical first presidential debate, perhaps one of the highest stakes presidential debates in U.S. history, arguably. Fox News, for example, after months, if not years, of characterizing Joe Biden as a doddering, ineffectual, mentally debilitated puppet who can't string two sentences together, has more recently been on the warpath, warning its viewers that Joe Biden will be an unstoppable force, an overpowering menace to poor, timid Donald Trump at the debate, thanks, as Fox and Trump like to say, to some mystery drugs that will be injected into Joe Biden to create a presidential debate super soldier out of the otherwise mentally unfit, incapacitated, dementia-facing, feeble ghost of a candidate that they've been describing Joe Biden as for most of the past 4 years.
He's both super feeble and a criminal mastermind.
Correct.
It's amazing.
Yeah, he is. Fox News, they are nothing if not expert at poisoning the brains of their listeners through constant repetition across all of its shows, marching in political lockstep with their chosen political messages 24/7 on that channel as they still otherwise pretend to be a news outlet as opposed to a Republican propaganda shop, and a very arguably effective and dangerous propaganda shop at that. To that end, I have raised the point once or twice on this program in recent months, though I spend much more time pondering this during my so-called off hours. What might be the more troubling outcome for this year's election? Donald Trump, who has vowed vengeance to his enemies if he's elected, to be a, quote, dictator on day one, to roll back the Biden administration's considerable landmark accomplishments, particularly when it comes to climate and energy, but also to many other hard-fought rights and freedoms, from free speech and access to abortion to health care. And he's pledged to dismantle what the right now describes as the administrative state in a terrifyingly autocratic and detailed explanation of their plans for a second Trump term that has been written out for all of us to see in a 900-page published manifesto created by the far-right organizations who are funding Trump's return to the White House, a document titled Project 2025. We can, and I'm sure will, go into the specific threats to democracy itself that are outlined by Project 2025 in future programs, and what that will mean if Donald Trump is elected to another term this November. But while the possibilities of that should be alarming enough on their own for America, the consequences for all of us if Trump wins another term, I'm almost as concerned about the other possibility, that being that Donald Trump loses this November and what that will mean to a huge chunk of Americans that have been brain poisoned by Fox News and other right-wing outlets for months now. People who have been told over and over again that Donald Trump's election over Joe Biden, well, it's already a done deal. And any other outcome where, let's say, Donald Trump doesn't win, well, that could only occur through massive fraud carried out by Democrats. That's the only way that could happen. Matt Gertz is a longtime senior fellow at Media Matters for America, where he served as the organization's research director during the 2016 presidential election, which Trump won that year, thanks in no small part to the hush money cover-ups for which he has finally been held to account with his 34 felony convictions recently in New York. But back then, Donald Trump was saying there was he was not going to be able to win because the election was so rigged against him. Well, Gertz warned late last week in a guest op-ed for MSNBC, the cycle of lies that drove the January 6, 2021 insurrection is again underway, said Gertz. 5 months before the 2024 election, claims that only fraud could explain a future Donald Trump defeat are already commonplace in the right-wing media ecosystem. Fox News stars and Trumpist influencers are priming their audiences to listen if Trump once again claims an election was, quote, rigged against him. And if so, to be prepared to come to his aid. Twice last week, for example, writes Gertz, Fox star Greg Gutfeld told viewers of The Five, which is Fox's most watched broadcast, apparently, that the public will only believe the 2024 results are legitimate if President Joe Biden loses it.
If they aren't that worried that Joe's going to lose, given his sorry state, what are they planning? What are they doing to save the day? What is up the Dems' sleeve to drag that body back into the White House? What's the dog that's not barking? And then let's say by some weird, miraculous chance that we didn't see coming, given that Trump is ahead, has a 66% chance of winning, looks like he's going to get the electoral count, and Joe still wins. Well, then what do you do after you win? How do you convince anyone that's real? Mm-hmm. Have they even thought of that? Like, even the Dems behind the scenes better hope he doesn't win, because no one's going to believe it.
No one's going to believe it. These aren't the droids you're looking for, Fox viewers. Really? Nobody's going to believe it? Well, maybe nobody who watches Fox News, which is why they are doing what they are doing. Gutfeld reiterated that same point the very next day, charging that the only way it's even thinkable the Democrats could win is by cheating.
If you somehow pull this out with some kind of shenanigans, I hasten to use that word so lightly, but shenanigans, you're going to deal with a public who doesn't buy the election. You know, they're going to go like, how did that win?
Don't point at me.
How did that? No, I'm pointing at Biden. It's because we got it out. How did that win? We don't buy it. You're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah, you're going to have to deal with that. If Joe Biden wins, there is no explanation for it other than the election was stolen by Democrats. That's it. Gutfeld, of course, is hardly the only one on the station pounding that drum that Donald Trump cannot win, that he cannot lose, that it would be impossible unless Democrats, just like they did in 2020, as Republicans almost all now falsely claim, unless Democrats steal the election.
And after Biden's approval rating just hit an all-time low, even the Democrat numbers guru, Nate Silver, is saying Joe needs to drop out.
People realize he is really losing it, and that's why he's going to lose the election, and he could even lose the nomination.
I would expect that he'll get through the debate, but the question is, will he be intelligible the whole time?
Those are winning numbers. Those are numbers that says Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States.
He's on the verge of a 1980 Ronald Reagan blowout of Jimmy Carter, and I don't see practically how the Democrats offset reality.
But yeah, that's right. Not only is Trump going to win, but anything short of a 1980 Ronald Reagan blowout when Reagan won 44 states and Democrats won 6 of them, Reagan won 489 electoral votes to the Democrats' 49 electoral votes. Anything short of that would indicate a mass fraud carried out by the Democrats. And of course, if that happens, well, what happens next? Joining us now is Matt Gertz, senior fellow at the nonprofit media watchdog Media Matters for America, where his work has long focused on the relationship between Fox News and the Republican Party, media ethics, and news coverage of politics and elections. But, of course, Matt Gaetz may be most famous, at least on the site still known as Twitter, for not being corrupt Florida Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz. Oh, Matt Gaetz, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thanks for having me back.
Good to have you here. So if I'm understanding the case that you are making correctly here, it seems as if Fox News is marching in near lockstep here, almost begging for another January 6th insurrection in the event that Donald Trump loses again this November, as he did in 2020. Is that how you're reading this?
That is the case. I mean, if you look at the last two presidential elections, 2016, Donald Trump won, 2020, Donald Trump lost. The one thing that they have in common is that in both cases, Donald Trump claimed to have been the victim of massive election fraud. Mm-hmm. He always does this. It is the most predictable thing in politics, that Donald Trump will complain that he is the victim of election fraud with no evidence to that effect. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he didn't need the election fraud claims in 2016. It was a way to explain why he didn't win the popular vote.
Right.
In 2020, he used those election fraud claims to try to stay in power through a coup. Mm-hmm. So the stakes are pretty high. And what Fox News and the right-wing media more broadly has been doing, you know, to a large extent over the past several months, but more broadly over the past several years, is prime their audiences to assume that any election that doesn't end with a massive Trump victory is the result of illegitimate votes being mm-hmm. cast, that it is a rigged election against Donald Trump, and that they should respond, you know, with all possible, you know, action mm-hmm. To prevent Joe Biden from being allowed to remain in office if he wins.
Now, Donald Trump, as you note, Matt, made the claim before the 2016 election. He made the claim before the 2020 election. It seems to me that he always does it as a way of saving face, and that even in 2016, when he ended up winning, he was still able to say, no, I wasn't wrong. They did rig it. As you note, it was the popular vote. I should have won that as well by millions of votes. So they tried to rig it, but they were unsuccessful. It is one thing, of course, when Donald Trump is making that claim that the only conceivable way that he could lose against, you know, in this case, the ghost of feeble Joe Biden, you know, who by the way, will be very powerful and almost impossible to defeat in the upcoming debate.
But only on account of the drugs, though.
That's right.
It's very important. We don't know what the drugs are.
Right.
Possibly the orange drink.
But yes. But, and actually possibly cocaine, because that's what Donald Trump actually accused Joe Biden of, taking cocaine over the
could
weekend.
Could be cocaine, could be Red Bull,
yeah.
Could be caffeine pills,
yeah.
Provigil. There's a whole list of potential substances that Joe Biden is imbibing, but only for special occasions.
Right.
Apparently.
But in Trump's case, he has made, let's give him credit for being consistent. He says every election he's in, is going to be rigged against him. But this now seems very different and far more dangerous, because now it's Fox News and really all of the right-wing media who is making this same lockstep argument with him. We didn't see that prior to the elections in 2016 and 2020, as I recall, but we're seeing that now.
We did see it before the 2020 election. I saw plenty of Fox News segments kind of telegraphing this argument, claiming that in-person voting was necessary because the mail-in ballots that were going to come in were going to be fake. Mm. They were making that claim. What's different now is they know what the result can be. They know that all of these claims about election fraud incite their viewers, that it leads them to even march upon the U.S. Capitol to try to prevent the peaceful transition of power. And they're doing it anyway. They're doing it after Fox News had to hand over nearly 800 million dollars yeah. in defamation settlement to Dominion Voting Systems for lying about election fraud. And they're doing it anyway.
And that's
the scariest thing, I think.
And I want to ask you about that in a second. But in the meantime, Fox News's own polling that came out this past week finds Joe Biden is now up nationally by 2 points over Donald Trump. And there's been a 3-point swing away from Trump and toward Biden since Trump's New York felony conviction in May, and a 7-point swing toward Biden since March. Now, we told listeners last week to don't get too excited about that because it's all within the margin of error, et cetera. But Fox News' own poll says, you know, Joe Biden is up over Donald Trump. How is Fox now squaring that circle from its own polling if, in fact, Donald Trump is unbeatable at this point?
Well, they're mainly doing it by not talking about their own poll.
Really?
I mean, you know, it's the sort of what they do is they will mention it in a you know, sort of rarely on some of the so-called straight news shows. Uh-huh. But in the you know, the heart of Fox, the primetime opinion shout fests,
right.
They're not talking about that poll because it cuts against their argument. And their argument is that, of course, Donald Trump is going to win. It's going to be a huge Reagan-sized landslide. And, you know, only election fraud can explain any other result. You know, I think, again, like, they know what they're doing. They know what their own polls say. They know that it doesn't say what they are claiming about this election.
Mm-hmm.
But they find, you know, telling the truth both too damaging to their political aims of getting Donald Trump back in the White House, and too damaging to their business interests, because they know that their fans will freak out if they, you know, are told that their preferred candidate might not win. And so, you know, they're in this weird duality where they're constantly claiming that Donald Trump is a shoo-in, even as their own polling does not reflect that.
So it's just a matter of managing what information they do and don't give to listeners. Classic, actually, when it comes to propagandizing people. Matt Gaetz, last year, you mentioned this, Fox News had had to cough up almost $800 million, nearly $750 million, to the Dominion Voting System Company for repeated knowing lies that were told on their broadcasts after 2020 about the company's machines changing votes to steal the election for Biden. It was all evidence-free, but those were the claims they made. Have they figured out, has Fox figured out that they can still make the same charges this year just so long as they don't pin it on a, you know, on a company with deep pockets who can sue them for defamation, that they're free to make all the false claims that they want? Is that sort of what this comes down to? Let's just be careful. Don't pick on a company. Let's just make up things about, you know, public officials or something like that.
That's where we are right now. Yes, exactly. What they've apparently learned is that they cannot give specifics. They can be as vague as they want to be about the inevitable election rigging that some sinister cabal of liberals and Democrats are planning, but they can't mention a specific agent or a specific company that is somehow supposed to be behind it, the mechanism for that. Now, how long that'll last, if there is an actual 2020 style repeat, I don't know. Like at some point, if that happens, we're going to be in a place where lots of figures on the right are casting about for villains, and there'll be a lot of pressure on Fox News to follow through and identify the same ones. And so that we'll see in that case where they decide to go. But again, I mean the business incentives are so strong for them to remain, directly connected to Donald Trump, to ensure that their viewers never hear a bad word about him. It's hard to imagine them backing off if there's another election theft. underway.
I was going to say, do you have any doubt if Joe Biden, this is one of the reasons why I keep going back and forth in my head, boy, which one is going to be more nightmarish, Donald Trump winning the election or Donald Trump losing the election? Because, I have no doubt, but I'm wondering if you do, if Donald Trump does lose, and frankly, no matter how he loses, if he loses in a landslide versus a close argument, a close contest, I can't see any way in which we don't, or at least he doesn't try to repeat what happened in 2020.
Yeah, I think it's pretty close to a guarantee that he's at least going to claim to be the victim of widespread election fraud if he loses. And, you know, the big difference between now and 2020 is that he's had 4 years to cement his control over the Republican Party, 4 years to ensure that, you can't get hired at the Republican National Committee unless you will attest to all of this election denial stuff. 4 years of purging the GOP of anyone who tried to stand against him when he tried to steal the election in 2020. And so with that Republican Party much more unified behind him, they're going to be off to the races very, very fast. And we're all going to have to be prepared for that.
Is that what you mean in your op-ed when you argue that November's election may prove closer than 2020 and the allies of the former president, who still claim the 2020 election was rigged, have removed many of the guardrails that helped forestall his 2020 plot? I was wondering what you meant by that.
Yeah, so there's two parts to that. One is that Joe Biden won a fairly sizable Electoral College victory. He won small margins, but in a lot of different states, such that overturning any one particular state would not have changed the overall results of the election. And that meant that Trump's efforts to get votes flipped, electoral votes flipped, was much more challenging. Because it was impossible to put, maximum pressure on any one particular state. If the election is closer, that won't be the case. If the entire force of the Republican Party and the right-wing media apparatus and, the crazy Trump supporters who have spent the last several years issuing death threats at anyone who challenges the former president, have the opportunity to all focus on one state, it will be much harder for the public officials in those states to resist that pressure. And the other part is that, there were some Republican heroes, I would say, in the 2020 post-election period. People like Mike Pence, who resisted when Donald Trump demanded their help at trying to overturn the election. And people like that have seen their power within the GOP dramatically reduced in the interim. I mean, Mike Pence is basically an unperson in the GOP at this point. He refuses to endorse Donald Trump and can't get anyone to mention that on Fox News. There was a really sort of astonishing shutout of that fact after he went on the network and said that he wasn't going to endorse Trump.
Right.
The Fox just didn't want its viewers to find out about it, and so they probably haven't. It's a very tough situation if we have an election that's closer than it was in 2020 with the GOP that's more united around Donald Trump than it was then.
Which, as long as you reminded me about that Mike Pence situation, it was kind of amazing because that was a big deal. That was a big piece of news that was broken by Fox News. Normally, if we were anywhere closer to reality, when a news outlet breaks a story like that, they will repeat it all day long. They'll point to themselves as having broken this news on our airwaves, et cetera, et cetera. Instead, in Fox News' case, they simply didn't repeat it again. They let it go away. It's a matter, again, it's not a matter, propaganda is not necessarily always about lying to your listeners or viewers. It's often a question of what you do or don't share with them. Now, just to make it clear that it is not only Fox News here, but the entire right-wing ecosystem here. Trump's former campaign manager turned White House advisor turned podcast host turned convicted criminal Steve Bannon told his listeners and viewers that there can be no other outcomes than a Trump win or a Biden theft.
There are no issues with the 2020 election. They stole it. Let me repeat that. They stole it. And they hate when we say this. They stole it. And they're on notice. They're not going to be able to steal it again. The only way they defeat Trump is to steal it. The only way they defeat Trump is they steal it. The only way they defeat Trump is they steal it. He is unstoppable.
That was in March. That was just a few weeks ago, Matt Gaetz. This seems like a very dangerous game that they're playing, but they know that it is dangerous, and clearly they do not seem to care, at least when it comes to, YOLO Steve Bannon at this point.
Yeah, and I think a key part of this is that, they have spent the last several years undermining the idea that anything bad happened on January 6th. I mean, the sort of right-wing myth-casting around the storming of the U.S. Capitol has been that it was a quote-unquote Fed-surrection in which the federal government kind of provoked the Trump supporters into entering the Capitol. That there wasn't any real violence, that they were basically like a bunch of tourists wandering around.
Antifa, they were a bunch of people from the left, even though everyone who has been arrested and charged is clearly not from the left. Yeah.
Right. And so you have this push for Donald Trump to pardon all of the January 6th, quote-unquote, martyrs. Mm-hmm. It's a really sick situation, but what they've done is they've valorized January 6th. They've made it so that, if you are a right-winger who was there, that is great. And therefore, if there's another January 6th sometime in the future, that all good, Fox News viewers, all good Steve Bannon supporters should be willing to go down and back Trump wherever necessary.
Which, we had a guest, and I'm forgetting who it was, but I was it was right after January 6th, and they explained, and they were sort of an expert in this sort of stuff, in insurrectionism and fascism and so forth. It told us on the air that they will not only will they move away from January 6th, they will actually use it as, as you said, Matt, valorizing it, actually looking, be bragging about, yes, I was there on January 6th, or we have to do this to uphold those patriots and freedom fighters who tried to save us back on January 6th, 2021. I thought that was insane at the time. But you're right. Here we are 4 years later, and they are absolutely valorizing what happened then. And it would not surprise me if they all want to be those heroes again this time around. Two questions before I let you go, Matt Gaetz. Are Democrats and real, media effectively rebutting what is going on here? If not, how should they? And two, what can we, the people, if anything, do in response to what is being teed up here, right before our very eyes?
Yeah, I think the answer to the second and the first are pretty similar. What we can do is demand more media attention and more media coverage of what I think should be the single most important issue of the 2024 presidential election, which is whether there will be a 2028 presidential election, whether we will continue to exist as a liberal democracy with a election system that ensures that the candidates who are elected through it are in power or not. I think there has been a lot of good reporting about Trump's clear plan to repeat what he did in 2020. But I think that, as is often the case in these situations, there's just not enough focus on it. It's too easy for reporters to get distracted by, you know, the drama of the day or the Hunter Biden trial or, you know, claims about Joe Biden's mental status, rather than focusing on the issues that matter. And I think that's unfortunately what we're seeing here. And we need, you know, more pressure and criticism from the public to ensure that this stays front and center.
I think that Democrats and frankly, media need to be pointing out that, yes, I mean, you know, as we discussed a few minutes ago, Matt, I can't envision a case in which Donald Trump loses this election in which he says, well, we put up a good fight, you know, maybe 2028. I can't envision such a thing. If he loses, I think media, Democrats, everyone else ought to be out there promising that, in fact, he will do what he did in 2020. He will try to steal the election that he lost. And now he's much better prepared. His supporters are better prepared to do so. And I think we need to make people understand, yes, that is going to happen. You may want Joe Biden to win. And if he wins, you might be happy about that. But that fight is not over because it's going to continue for a while thereafter, through the Electoral College, through January 6th, through the inauguration. This is going to be a long and bumpy road. Matt Gaetz, senior fellow at Media Matters, a long time at Media Matters, where he studies Fox News and the Republican Party, media ethics, news coverage of politics and elections. You can and should follow him on the site still known as Twitter, where he is Matt Gaetz, not Matt Gaetz, but Matt Gaetz. You can also follow his work at mediamatters.org, and I will, of course, link to his MSNBC op-ed late last week when I post tonight's show at bradblog.com. Matt, it's been great talking to you. It has been too long. Let's try to do it sooner next time, shall we?
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, my friend. Greatly appreciate it. All right, let's take a quick break here. I don't know, like I said, I don't know if we're going to have time for calls or not, but you can give it a shot if there's something you want to try to get in. I'll try to make room for you. No promises. 818-985-KPFK, 818-985-5735. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with some climate news, which is just, boy, normally I'd put that right at the top of the show. Couldn't do it today, but we're going to do it next. Right here on the Bradcast, I'm Brad Friedman.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and the Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
It is cruel. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. It's a cruel summer, and the summer's only, what, 3 or 4 days old at this point, Desi Doyen? I think that's all we are.
Yeah, it's actually, of course, the heat started much sooner than meteorological summer, but yes, that's where we are.
We have been warning for a couple of weeks now about the extended heat wave that is, yes, now, as we promised, buckling much of the nation and indeed around the world. In recent days, we've added wildfires in a number of states, including California here, and the first named storm of this year's hurricane season to the mix, resulting in flooding in Mexico and along the southern coast of Texas. Now we've got to add massive flooding in the upper Midwest to the mix of climate change fueled nightmares and consequences being felt across the bulk of the nation, affecting millions of Americans who, as AP reports today, sweated through another scorching day on Sunday as temperatures soared across much of the country. While U.S. residents were rescued from floodwaters that forced evacuations across the Midwest, including in an Iowa town where the flood gauge was submerged. That's how bad it was. From the Mid-Atlantic to Maine, across the Great Lakes region, and throughout the West to California, public officials cautioned residents about the dangers of excessive heat and humidity. In Oklahoma, for example, the heat index reached 107 degrees on Sunday. In the Midwest, where South Dakota, Iowa, and Minnesota meet, floodwaters rose throughout the weekend. In northern Iowa, entire neighborhoods and at least one entire town were evacuated as 13 rivers all flooded in the region. Quote, when the flood gauge is underwater, it's really high, said Eric Tigges of Clay County, Iowa's emergency management team. Governor Kim Reynolds declared a disaster for 21 counties in northern Iowa, including Sioux County, where in drone video posted by the local sheriff, no streets were visible, just roofs and treetops poking above the water. Reynolds, a Republican who has opposed action to mitigate our climate crisis, told reporters on Sunday, quote, businesses are shuttered, main streets have been impacted, hospitals, nursing homes, and other care facilities were evacuated, cities are without power, and some are without drinkable water. In what sure sounds to me to be like a perfect description of our dystopian climate-changed future, but for the fact that it is happening right now and is being overseen by climate denialists like Kim Reynolds in Iowa. National Weather Service meteorologist Donna Duberk said parts of northern Nebraska, southeastern South Dakota, southern Minnesota, and northwest Iowa received 8 times their typical average rainfall over the past weekend, and more heavy rain was expected this week. Desi Doyen, 8 times the average rainfall.
Yes, and of course, we know that climate change, based on numerous studies, is making extreme storms and heat waves like the ones we've been seeing just over the last couple of weeks and simultaneously hitting around the world, makes all of that more likely, more intense, longer lasting.
I'm going to get to some of that around the world stuff because it is not only here, it is everywhere. But before I get out to that world, let me note also in South Dakota, Governor Kristi Noem, another Republican climate denier and friend to the fossil fuel industry, declared an emergency after severe flooding in the southeastern part of her state. Gosh, I hope everything was okay down in that gravel pit.
Well, listen, the point I think that is really important to understand here is that climate change impacts are super expensive. And so when you have a bunch of climate science deniers and folks who are trying to delay action on climate change, they always talk about how expensive it's going to be to transition away. And it's like, wait, have you stopped to look at how expensive it is to not act on climate change? It's actually much more expensive because our infrastructure was not built or designed for these 21st century climate impacts.
I have a feeling it's kind of expensive up there in Sioux Falls in Kristi Noem, South Dakota, the state's largest city, which had an estimated 10 to 15 inches of rain over 3 days.
Right.
One person died in the floods. That's expensive too, isn't it? Several rivers were expected to peak sometime Monday through Wednesday night. So this is going to go on for a while, according to the governor at a news conference. So none of this is over yet by a long shot. But elsewhere, it wasn't the rain. It was the heat as the biggest worries. The city of Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia all saw record heat over the weekend. Last year, the U.S. experienced the most heat waves since 1936. An AP analysis of data from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, yes, the CDC, which, by the way, Donald Trump and the Republicans would like to shut down, An analysis of their data by AP found that excessive heat contributed to more than 2,300 heat-related deaths, the highest in 45 years of record-keeping on that. That was last year. In 2023, 2,300 died from the heat. That's expensive too, isn't it? The National Weather Service warned of the potential for rare tornadoes in the Northeast overnight on Sunday. Tornadoes on Saturday struck in Wisconsin, leveling the historic Apple Grove Lutheran Church, founded in 1893 in the town of Argyle, and it is apparently no more. As Desi mentioned, record heat's not only a problem in the U.S. right now. Much of the world is also suffering under similar and arguably worse climate-fueled heat waves. As we reported in our Green News report last week, the annual Muslim pilgrimage to the sacred city of Mecca that wrapped up last week became a death march. Originally, we reported that 500 had died, then 1,000 were reported as dead, and now more than 1,300 Hajj participants who died in temperatures that climbed above 124 degrees Fahrenheit.
And those were the people that had registered. Officials in Saudi Arabia were saying that there were probably hundreds more who had not registered, who have died, who they don't know who they are, but they're trying to confirm how many the actual number is. It's likely going to go much higher than just 1,300.
More than 650 of those known to have died were Egyptian. At least two were American. Kuwait reached 122 degrees, nearing the warmest temperatures ever measured on planet Earth. Northern China is seeing all-time record heat, as is Algeria. Paraguay in South America seeing similar heat right now, over 100 degrees, where it's supposed to be winter, by the way, at this point, and where nights are not cooling down. Similar in the Pacific Islands. The Paris Olympics opening soon are said to be at risk due to extreme temperatures. There were records shattered across the Mediterranean region from Greece to Turkey. Bulgaria saw June heat records broken. Iraq reportedly hasn't had any relief any hour of the day for days in a row now, breaking overnight low heat records, cooling down to no more than 85 degrees overnight. Back here at home over the weekend on Sunday, the low temperature in Phoenix, Arizona, reached a record high of 91 degrees, which, according to the National Weather Service, is 10 degrees above normal for this date. We're talking about the overnight low. That also sets another new record, warm, low temperature, breaking the previous record of 89 degrees that was set back in 2016. This weekend, 91 degrees at night. Des, that is something that you have frequently cited in your Green News reports over the years, numbers which don't get as much attention. But the warmth of overnight lows means that people do not get the chance to cool down overnight, radically increasing the risk of heat stroke over several days.
And it's especially important to pay attention to that in areas of the country that don't traditionally have air conditioning because they didn't need to in the past. But now that's a growing concern. We've also talked about how schools are facing higher costs as they are going to likely be forced to install cooling systems that will be expensive and also expensive to maintain from here on out, to make sure that students stay safe. I mean, this, as scientists are frequently warning us, summer is hot. The summer 2024 is likely to be the hottest summer on record, even hotter than last summer's record 2023. Yep. But the thing to remember is that this summer is also likely to be the coolest summer for the rest of our lives.
Yep. Which is a terrifying thought. So as you ponder, you know, who you may be voting for this year, in the most critical election, certainly of our lifetime, perhaps in our nation's history, I do hope you'll take some, take climate into consideration, given that the facts are one party, the Democrats, led by Joe Biden, are actually doing something about it. The other party, the Republicans, are doing everything they can to prevent action that might mitigate this crisis. as they are being led by a candidate, Donald Trump, who has vowed to reverse every one of Joe Biden and the Democrats' landmark climate initiatives if he wins this November. Here's our friend, climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann of the University of Pennsylvania, warning about exactly that on this this weekend in an interview with journalist Ali Velshi.
It's night and day. You have, on the one hand, a president who has helped shepherd the most aggressive climate legislation in U.S. history. The Inflation Reduction Act, the provisions of that bill, if implemented, will lower our carbon emissions by about 40%. It's not enough. We have to do more. But it's an important start. And on the other hand, is a president who will basically be a rubber stamp for polluters and right-wing interests who are trying to dismantle not just U.S. climate policy, but global climate policy. So it really is about the future of the planet. And they have this wish list of things that they were unable to accomplish in only one Trump presidency that they are going to make sure to accomplish in a prospective second Trump presidency. And that's why I've said that, you know, a second Trump presidency would be more or less game over for climate action. It would be game over for domestic climate policy. And as goes the U.S., goes the rest of the world when it comes to action on climate.
People need to hear that. People need to understand that. So we try to underscore that on this show, and I should note, that's not a partisan matter. It's a fact matter. The fact is, Donald Trump has promised to reverse Joe Biden and the Democrats' climate agenda. The fact is, Joe Biden and the Democrats have passed the most aggressive climate agenda, at least $400 billion in the Infrastructure Inflation Reduction Act alone, $400 billion, the largest investment in climate action anywhere in the world at any time, done by Joe Biden and the Democrats without a single vote of a Republican. And again, it ain't partisan. It's just a fact. Sadly, it's a fact that too many on our mainstream corporate media seem to think is partisan just to point it out. But facts are facts. Whether you like them or not, they are facts. And my job is to inform the electorate, much as it is for the rest of the folks in the news media. And they ought to be out there informing the electorate the way we are trying to do here at the broadcast, as we have been for years on this show, on the Green News Report, etc. Now, with all of that in mind, a bit of a somewhat counterintuitive news that you are unlikely to hear elsewhere for some of our California listeners up in Central and Northern California, as folks are getting ready to take time off, over the 4th of July holiday and head out to the beach, etc., out here in the Golden State. Well, here's some news you need to know about. As I say, counterintuitive. Swimmers could experience hyperthermia in only 30 minutes off the coast of Crescent City, California, after water temperatures there have plunged because of coastal winds. Summer temperatures in Northern and Central California could have more people flocking to the beach to cool off in the ocean, according to Newsweek today. But data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, shows that some of the coastal waters off of California are too cold for safe swimming. Well, that's kind of crazy, given that, you know, most of the world's oceans right now, as we have also been reporting, are at record warmth. With much of it, much of the oceans across the globe already in May having reached temperatures that were not usually seen until August. That's how warm the oceans are right now. Well, at least everywhere except for off of Crescent City in Central and Northern California.
Yeah, and off the coast of Greenland, where the Greenland ice sheet is melting into the Atlantic Ocean and could, you know, stall the Gulf Stream current that gives Europe its nice, pleasant, moderate, temperate climate and allows, you know, food to be grown there. So, yeah, there's all kinds of, you know, the ocean heating is not uniform around the world. Mm-hmm. That's just an average so that we can keep track by metrics. But, yes, it's really, I think, an example of how you know, man-made climate change is sort of disrupting normal patterns that we're used to seeing. So this may or may not be part of that, but it does give you a sense of things are getting more extreme, more extremier.
We don't know if it's part of it yet. A recent temperature reading off the coast of Crescent City revealed that water temperatures were 47.3 degrees Fahrenheit. That's more than 3 degrees below normal for this time of year, 4 degrees below winter water temperatures in January. That's how cold this has gotten. So how did this happen? Well, meteorologists and weather experts are blaming the temperature plunge on what they are calling an intense marine cold spell in that region. These water temperatures are up to 5 degrees below normal. These well below normal water temperatures are apparently due to a strong upwelling of cold ocean water and are enhancing the marine layer or the natural air condition, keeping coastal areas cool while inland areas experience intense heat, anywhere from 100 to 108 degrees Fahrenheit in California's Central Valley over the weekend.
Yes, making the extremes more extreme.
So the wind is blowing south from Oregon. Thanks a lot, Oregon. It's blowing south from Oregon, and that wind apparently causes an upwelling, a phenomenon that happens when surface water is pushed farther out to sea and colder water rises to replace it. So when you go swimming, it's the cold water that you are feeling. If you go swimming off of, you know, northern and central California, it's water from the deep oceans that is coming up and cooling you down and actually putting you in danger because a lot of people die from cold exposure, particularly in water. And they're warning people, do not be in there very long if you're in one of those areas.
But that's literally just for the coast of Oregon. If you're in Florida, it's like a bathtub.
Yes, it is.
And it's bad for the corals, sadly.
So if it ain't one thing, it's another, I guess. If it ain't the heat, it's the cold on a planet that now seems entirely out of climate whack, even as scientists have been warning that we will be looking back, as Des said, on you know, summers like this in 2024 as among the coolest summers we have ever lived through. As we noted last week in yet another clip from our climatologist friend, Michael Mann, what we have learned is that when carbon emissions are decreased, it gets less hot very quickly. And yes, much of the work that we have accomplished toward that end over the last 4 years, though not nearly enough, but it is now all at threat of being undone, overruled, reversed if Donald Trump and the Republicans do well in this November's elections. If that's what you want, you know who to vote for. Got to get out. My thanks again to our guest, Matt Gertz of Media Matters for America, to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, want to hear it again, want to share it with a friend, a family, an enemy, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
To the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.